A warm welcome to each and every single one of you who's tuned in to yet another episode of Disky Talk with Luyolo. On this week's episode, I've got a special guest. He goes by the name of Leba. How are you doing, bro?
I'm all things. How are you, brother?
All is well. All is well. So it's all things Euro 2020 team talk. That's our special feature episode, which will focus on four squads, which will be testing at the Euro 2020 tournament, which starts in a week. And we round it off by picking our preferred starting 11s for each squad. So I'll get right into it. The first question on today's episode, what do you make of coaches calling up a provisional squad and then having to cut players a week later for the initial tournament?
First of all, I think it really unsettles the camp. You can imagine being called up and actually putting your all into training only for you to thought that you won't be joining the squad later on. So I think it really does a number on a player's confidence, but something tells me that that actually informs some players that you might not make it, you know, they might just give you a heads up. So yeah, but it would really unsettle the camp from what I take from the whole situation.
Yeah, because I mean, I asked this question because if you look at England, for example, you know, the first squad announcement they made had 33 players, and then they cut, you know, the seven players. And I looked at it and I think to myself, but as Gareth Southgate, you more or less know what each player can offer you. I mean, in the past 4 or 5 months, players have shown you their full skill set. You know everything about each, every single one. So why don't just call it 26, you know? And that's just my opinion, because I also feel that it unsettles the camp. And if anything, I think there's a bit of an air of nerves, you know, whereas I think when going into the camp and going into a big tournament, I think you need everybody relaxed and you need everybody feeling one, in a sense, because what happens is you got 33 players and it's like, well, any seven can be cut from here. And then, you know, it just, for me, there's just a certain energy which I don't quite comprehend about these provisional squads which are called up, especially because the coaches know everything about each and every single player. So to me, it just doesn't make sense. I think it's just better if they call up a 26 and that's it. They just call up the squad.
Especially with the England team, they seem to have a brotherhood. So I don't understand why you'd actually do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because it like you said, confidence wise and going forward as well. You know, because you look at a player like James Ward-Prowse, for example, who Ollie Watkins, another two players which I think, you know, in the future they've got a future. You know, national team. It's just when they go through this, it sort of feels like you're a part of it, but you're not a part of it.
You're not a part of it at the same time.
At the same time, you know, you're made to feel like the stepchild, if I could put it like that. So I don't really advocate for it. I don't really advocate for it.
No, but I'm with you on that one, bro.
Yeah, but anyway, going into the next segment. So, Ramos has been left out of the Spanish squad for the Euros.
Big call.
And ability. Do you think this was a mistake?
I think it was. Actually, yeah, I think it was a mistake to think about it now. He's a very prominent figure. I don't see any leaders in that Spain squad. So, yeah, I think his presence would have done a lot, especially considering that the coach has chosen a lot of young players. But I really don't see a leader in that team. I don't think Busquets has those leadership skills. And yeah, I just think he had to be there. Even if he doesn't play, Ramos was just supposed to be there. Just put him in the squad and he can do the rest in the locker room. But I really think he had to be there, honestly.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you, especially when you, consider the fact that a newly integrated player like Emerick Laporte, if you put Ramos next to Laporte, that is a solid centre-back
contract.
One could even argue that potentially you're looking at one of the best, centre-back partnerships in the Euros, you know, and in Europe at large, you know. And I love the fact that you mentioned experience, because a lot of those players will be, you know, it'll be their first time going to a major tournament representing Spain. It's always good when you have a leader, you know, besides a player, but a leader who's been there, done that, got the T-shirt. He's won all the trophies that you can think of when it comes to world football. And another thing I like about Ramos is the attitude. He's got this winning mentality, and you can just see it, you know. He's got this confidence about him, which I think easily rubs off onto other players, you know. And him being a centre-back, what that does is that it solidifies the spine of the team. So if you got Ramos and Laporte, and then in front of them, you got a Busquets, you got Thiago, already, that's already a solidified spine.
You're working at an advantage, true.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Which then, when you go into games with that inexperienced attacking lineup, there's not as much pressure, you know. They don't have to be outscoring teams to win games. Where they score one or two goals, that would be enough, because you've got that spine and you've got that leadership. So I think it's actually, look, it's a huge call. However, in my opinion, I just think it's a very bad call. You know, I think Ramos still has a lot to offer in football.
True. Also considering the fact that a lot of these players being... Okay, but you did mention that a lot of these players being called up, it's actually their first, you know, big European national appearing, what you call it? Tournament that they'll be competing in. So I don't think I watched the game 2 days back, and it just seemed like a bunch of guys, okay, a bunch of quality players, but they just didn't seem to really gel. There's no, I wasn't getting a sense of that brotherhood with them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Ramos was supposed to be there, honestly.
Yeah, I think so, because he's the one who really has, you know what I like about him? He's very mature, and he brings about a cohesive energy to the squad. Because I remember when he was still playing for Spain, especially in the twilight of the El Clasico, when Barcelona and Real Madrid were always going at each other, and there was this negative feud between them. Whenever they went to the Spanish national camps, some players went on to mention that Ramos was always very good at putting his Real Madrid cap to the side and putting on the Spanish cap and being able to bond with them and being able to bring everybody together, irrespective of which club you play for, irrespective of the rivalries, irrespective of anything that has happened, you know, other than what's happening at the camp. So I think not having Ramos there is a huge mistake, and I think it's going to cost Spain, in my opinion. And I really agree with you. You know, they really looked disjointed the other night, and they didn't inspire much confidence. You know, and sometimes you just need that one presence in the team which makes a difference. And I think Ramos is that difference.
I mean, I watched, especially with Morata, he just looked so too casual for my liking. He didn't have a sense of... what do you call it?
Urgency,
yes. He missed so many chances. So I feel like if there was actually a leader in there, you know, I'm not saying that it's a good thing to play with pressure, but you know that if you miss two chances with Ramos in the team, you're definitely going to get a piece of his mind, you know?
Definitely. So let's head into it. The first squad is... Portuguese national team. So the goalkeepers, they've got Anthony Lopez from Lyon, they got Rui Patricio from Wolves, and Rui Silva from Granada. And going into their defense, they got João Cancelo from Man City, Nelson Semedo from Wolves, Jose Font from Lille, Pepe from Porto, Ruben Dias From Manchester City, Nuno Mendes from Sporting, and Rafael Guerrero. What do you make of the defense? Are you happy with these players which have been picked?
It looks like a solid defense, to be honest with you. There's a lot of experience, you know, with Joseph Fonte and Rui Patricio there. So, and Cancelo and Guerrero can also bring some trouble, you know. So I'm really happy with the defense.
Yeah, I agree with you more. Going into the midfield, there's Danilo Pereira, plays for PSG. There's João Palhinha from Sporting, Ruben Dias from Wolves, Bruno Fernandes from United, João Moutinho from Wolves, Renato Sanchez from Lille, Sergio Oliveira from Porto, and William Carvalho. What do you make of that midfield? Do you think that is a midfield which can actually compete with some of the best midfields within the European tournament?
Definitely. As long as you have Bruno Fernandes in your team, you're at an advantage. So I think it's a solid midfield, to be honest with you. I'm happy with it. I'm definitely happy. It's just like the defense, you know, bit of youngsters coming in and some experience. So I'm happy with the midfield.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, because when I'm looking at this midfield, I like the balance. You know, I just think it's very important to have players who can offer something different. I also like the fact that when you're looking at, if you're going to go with a double pivot and you want safety, you could always go with João Moutinho and Ruben Neves, who play as a double pivot for Wolves. You know, and then you could always have Bruno in front of them as a 10. If you want to play maybe with 2 8s, you can have a Danilo Pereira who sits deep. You can have Renato Sanchez and Bruno as maybe 2 number 8s. Like, there's so many things that you could do with this midfield. And there's so many players which offer so much. And I'm actually very excited, because I think this Portuguese squad is it's going to be one of the best squads that we've seen, you know, because as much as they've found some success, but over the years, you always felt that, man, something is missing from this Portuguese squad. Because sometimes you feel like, okay, yes, they might have won the Euros, and they might garner a bit of success, but sometimes you feel like they're a lot more on the lucky side as opposed to them having a dominant squad.
True. They always look good on paper, you know. So I think, yeah, but this might be Ronaldo's last Euro, so yeah, we'll see what they can offer.
Speaking of Ronaldo, when it comes to the forwards which were picked, he's joined by Pedro from Sporting, he's Andre Silva from Frankfurt, Bernardo Silva from Manchester City, Diogo Jota from Liverpool, Gonzalo Guedes from Valencia, João Felix from Atletico Madrid, and Rafa Silva from Benfica. Do you think this forward line can produce goals at the Euros?
They have to. They really have to. There's just too much quality going up front, and I think they can cause any defense a lot of trouble. So I'm really expecting a lot from them. You know, there's a lot of winners as well in the team. So I'm really happy with the attack. Really, really happy.
So now you have to play coach. You had to come up with the formation and a starting 11 from the squad. What would it be?
Okay. I'll start with Patricio in the goals. Okay, first of all, I'll be playing a 4-3-3. So I'm going to have Patricio in the goals. And I'm going to have a centre-back pairing of Diaz and Jose Fonte. And then I'm going to have Cancelo as the right wing back and Guerrero as the left wing back. And then as my holding, I'm going to have Carvalho. And with my 2 8s, it's going to be Bruno Fernandes and Sanchez. Then my front three, I'm gonna have CR7 up front alongside Bernardo Silva and João Félix. How does that sound?
Oh, yeah, that sounds very nice. I really like the sound of that, you know. And if I must be honest, speaking of forwards, I'm very disappointed that Pedro Neto couldn't finish off the
True,
season,
true, true, true,
you
true,
know,
true.
he picked up. I feel like maybe he might have not been a starter, but he would have definitely brought something different to this Portuguese squad,
Definitely,
especially with
definitely.
regards to impact and coming off the bench. I think he's a player who could have made a difference. And when I it's actually very similar. My team is very similar to yours because you know what they say about great minds. So I would play a 4-3-3 as well. And my 4-3-3 would be Patricio in goals. My two center backs, I'd go with Diaz and Pepe. And I know a lot of this would raise eyebrows when I say Pepe because a lot of people look at his age. However, if you look at his performances during the UEFA Champions League, yeah, he did not look a day old over 30, you know. He was a
True.
man who was doing really well. And what I like about Pepe is that I know a lot of fans would look at him and think this man can be a bit crazy at times, but that's what I really love about him. He's got that fire and that passion, which a lot of people don't have. And to have that passion and that fire at that age for me is really important. So I'd go with that because for the experience, João Cancelo as the right back, Guerrero as the left back, and then in midfield, I would go with João Moutinho, Renato Sanches, and Bruno Fernandes as well. And then up front, I got Cristiano Ronaldo, João Felix, and Bernardo Silva. However, what I am going to mention that if you do want to tweak it, one could always look at André Silva because I think he's had a really good
He
season.
deserves, yeah, he deserves to be in the starting 11, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's a player that one could really use. However, I mean, these guys can always come off the bench and make an impact, you know. So, if you were to honestly tell me, how far do you think this Portuguese squad will go?
I think I'm expecting them to at least get to the semifinals. To at least get to the semifinals, to be honest with you. You know, I don't think they'll be lucky as they were the last time. So yeah, I think I'll be happy if they reach the semifinals, to be honest with you.
If I have to call a spade, I think they'll get knocked out in the quarterfinal
True.
by one of the teams that will contest in the finals.
That's a big call. That's a very big call. Anything is really possible with CR7 in the team. So,
Yeah, that's always a factor. It's going to be really interesting, you know. It's going to be really interesting. It's just when you look at it, you know, and whereas we delve deeper into this episode and you look at the different squads, you just get to realize that we're in for a special treat, you know, during this European event. And speaking of squads, we move on to the Belgium squad. So, as the goalkeepers that they've selected, they've got Courtois, Mignolet, Cels, the defenders are Jan Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Thomas Vermaelen, Thomas Meunier, Jason Denayer, Boyata, Dion Donker, and Timothy Castagne. What do you make of that defense?
It also seems very solid on paper. I won't lie. But I don't I'm not so I'm really not so confident in them. I don't know. I'm just maybe Toby could be the leader, but he hasn't had a great season, so I really don't know what to make of it. But it just really seems okay. I'm just gonna give them the upper hand just because of the midfield and their forwards, but we'll get to that. But I'm not I'm really not so confident. So I just think it's okay. It's just really okay.
You know, and when you say that, I also look at a player like Jan Vertonghen, who, you know, is at Benfica. He's not really playing at the highest level,
You
and
know.
some of these defenders haven't had a good season, in my opinion, you know, according to their standards. And when you look at a player like Dion Donker, who plays for Wolves, he often plays the defensive midfielder there, and he's had, you know, some very good showings throughout the season. It's going to be interesting to see if they can look at him, because, you know, when I consider Vertonghen and Alderweireld and Vermaelen, I don't know. They don't inspire the same confidence they did a couple of years ago, because I don't
True,
think
true.
they've got the legs, you know, especially when you look at Vermaelen and Vertonghen, who are injury prone. However, what I will do is I'll give Vertonghen and Alderweireld the benefit of the doubt, because we do know that when they paired together, you know, at times they look like one of the best centre back pairings in Europe. So I will give them the benefit of the doubt. However, I think a Dion Donker is a player that they should be looking to start to integrate into that defence and become a regular. Another player that you could look at is Jason Denayer as well. You know, I think these two players at club level, they've been knocking now, you know, and they've been consistent for the past 2 seasons. So I think those players are players who can slowly get integrated. However, players that I'm very excited about, Munir and Castagne. You know, I'm very excited when it comes to the wing back play, and I feel like these two have a lot to offer. And especially Castagne, who's had a very good season with Leicester.
True,
Yeah,
true,
so
true.
I'm really looking forward to his growth and development within the Euro 2020. Yeah, and moving on to the midfielders, we've got Axel Witsel, Kevin De Bruyne, we've got Chadli, Yannick Carrasco, Youri Tielemans, Thorgan Hazard, Dennis Pratt, and Vanaken. What do you make of that midfield? Do you think that this midfield is strong enough to go head to head with arguably some of the best midfields within the Euro 2020? Or do you feel like they've made the wrong call? Because when you look at their midfield, they seem a bit thin in midfield. You know, they've got more defenders and more forwards than they do with midfielders. How do you feel about that?
To be honest with you, I'm quite happy with the selection. There's a lot of quality. So I think with regards to the midfield, I don't think we'll be seeing a lot of what do you call it? I think he'll play the same midfield three for as much as he can, but I'm really happy. There's a lot of quality in there. They can definitely go toe to toe with any team. So I'm really happy with the midfield, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you, you know, because, you know, when you look at players like Carrasco, you look at Thorgan Hazard, I don't really consider them as midfielders. They're more your
True. You're
wingers
forward.
and forwards, you know. So as to why they included as midfielders, you know, that's a story for another day. But I was a bit worried when I looked at those midfielders, because we do know that Kevin De Bruyne will miss the first
Open.
match
Yes.
that's been alleged, you know. However, if it's a race against time, you know, however, what was announced was that he will miss it, subject to him passing a late fitness test. However, say now he does miss the late fitness test, which three would you then start for the first encounter for Belgium from the midfield?
Oh, and I'd already had him on my selection, but I'd have Vettel, Tielemans, and I think I'm gonna put Carrasco where De Bruyne was supposed to be. I think he'll take on that responsibility better than anyone, you know. So, yeah, well, it changes my team selection a bit, but I think I'll put Carrasco there if he actually misses the first game.
Yeah.
So it's Vettel sitting, and Carrasco and Tielemans as my 2-8. Because I feel like Tielemans and Carrasco kind of offer different qualities. So yeah, I think Carrasco would be the safest option in that position to replace De Bruyne. What do
Yeah,
you
I,
think?
yeah, you know, when I when I look at it, and I would what I would do is I would go you know, De Bruyne being injured, it changes, it sort of changes the complex, it
It
changes a lot,
a
it changes the approach. However,
lot,
what I would look at, you know, there's two options. Firstly, I would look at maybe then playing Axel Witsel as the holding midfielder, and maybe you could have Yuri Tielemans next to him, and then have Eden Hazard at as a 10 just
Oh,
behind him,
okay, that could also work.
you
That could
know,
also work, yeah.
and then have Dries Mertens on the one side, and then what you could do is surprise selection. You could go for a Jeremy Doku, for example, you know, because
Okay.
he's an unknown entity. And sometimes in these type of games, when a lot of teams will still be feeling each other out, sometimes you can just go with that one wild card, and you know, you could deliver, or you could go with Thorgan Hazard, who's a lot more suited playing as a winger
True.
than his brother, in a sense, because when you look at it, Eden Hazard is a lot more comfortable in that number 10 role.
True.
So that's what I would look at, and then I would sacrifice Tielemans' offensive abilities for that specific game, and have him sit along with Axel Witsel, because we do know that in the midfield, defensively, Hazard is Eden Hazard, to be specific. Not yeah, it's not really going to give you much. So I think that's how I would approach that first game.
Okay, sounds fair enough, actually. But I'd already had De Bruyne in my team selection, so I don't know if I'm gonna be able to change it once you ask me about my starting 11. So
No, no.
I'm just gonna give you one with Kevin De Bruyne, because this is how I think they'll line up going forward, you
Yeah,
know.
no, definitely, you know, when he recovers again, because it's not he doesn't have a it's not a major issue, you know, that he's dealing with. It's something he will overcome. So we will see Kevin De Bruyne starting for Belgium, just maybe not in the first game. And moving on to the forwards, Eden Hazard, like I had mentioned, we got Dries Mertens, Lukaku, Christian Benteke, Batshuayi, Doku, and Leandro Trossard. What do you make of this forward lineup?
I'm really happy. There's a lot of quality going there. I think you can really rely on every player, considering the amount of quality they'll have around them. So I'm really happy with the forwards. I'm very, very happy. They might actually have the best forwards, going into the tournament on paper. So I'm really happy. I'm very happy.
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, when you look at Batshuayi and Benteke, they become different beasts when they get to national team.
True, 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 true.
And
Especially but why?
yeah, you know, because one might look at them and like, but these guys aren't really performing at club level, so why call them up? But as soon as they get to national team, they are really different beasts. And I say
True.
this because we all know that Lukaku will start as the nine. However, coming off the bench to impact the game, Mitru Batshuayi is second to none in that category when it comes to national team football, especially for Belgium. He's always able to come off the bench and impact the game, and I really like the look of him. And when you look at Dries Mertens, Leandro Trossard as well, who's had a very good
Oh,
season
yeah.
at Brighton, you know, he
True.
offers something different. Jeremy, like we mentioned earlier on. So this attack, to me, it screams goals, you know, and that's what I like. I like that each and every single player within this forward line scores goals. You know, that's the most important thing, that everybody here is somewhat a goal scorer of note. And you did mention your preferred 11, so let's head into it. which formation would you go with, and who do you have in your 11?
Okay, I'm gonna go with the 4-3-3 again. And in goals, I'm gonna have Courtois, and my two center backs, I'm gonna have Tongan and Toby, and I'm gonna have Castagne as my right back and Mooney as my left back. As my sitter, I think I'll have Vittel and play Kevin De Bruyne and Tillemans as my 2-8. And then as my front three, I think I'll have Lukaku leading the line with Hazard on the left and Carrasco on the right.
Mm.
I like it.
So I'm going to have to go a bit different with regards to the formation and mix it up a bit. So I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with a 3-4-3.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. So what I would go with is my three at the back. I've got Tongan, Alderweireld, and Mounier.
Mm.
And then my right wing back would be Castagne.
Mm.
And then my left wing back would be Thorgan Hazard. And then two in the midfield would be Axel Witsel and Tillemans. Mm. And then my three up front, I've got Lukaku, Hazard, and Kevin De Bruyne.
Whoa.
And then I'd actually leave out Dries Mertens, as I think is a player who can actually come on and impact the game. He's a player that if you do switch the formation up, if you do get rid of one of the center backs, you could always bring him into the lineup. However, I think a 3-4-3 with this Belgian team, that's how I would approach the games.
True. No, I'm happy with your decision as well. I'm very happy.
I like to go a bit unorthodox at times, but
always playing the wild card.
yeah. Because it I feel, you know, the era that we're in football, it's become very easy to study opponents. It's become very easy to nullify opponents. So the more, how can I put this? You need a bit of an unpredictable element within your lineup. And I think that is very important. And when you have players like Hazard and De Bruyne who are floating the whole time, it becomes very difficult to pick them up, as opposed to having them in stationary positions. I think it's better you play them as you play them in a three up front, but they play as the two number 10s that just sit just behind Lukaku, and they can just roam wild. And another thing is with Thorgan Hazard, the reason why I'll go with him as a wing back, I really like him because he's got a very traditional winger element to him. And what I do like about him is that going forward, he offers so much, and I love the speed as well.
True, yeah.
So in as much as there might be three center backs, but it's actually a very offensive lineup, because with Thorgan Hazard joining, you know, then you're actually looking at four forwards as opposed to the three up front, because Thorgan Hazard will from time to time join. And it is actually a system that can actually shift from a 3-4-3 and then transition to a 4-3-3, you know. So there's many ways to go about it. I just think that in modern day football, one always needs to have a very dynamic approach to always outsmart the opponent.
True. Now, though, that element of surprise is very important. It's very important.
Yep. And let's move on to the French national team.
I'm very excited about this one.
As the French say, mon frère. I am so excited, you know. Whenever the announcement is made with regards to the French national team, I'm always excited. You know, I always go and look. I look at the players which have been selected. I go to their Instagram page, and I actually check the players reporting to camp. Like it's always exciting. The
They do it
drip.
with so much swagger,
Ace the drip.
I
But anyway,
hear you. I hear you.
let's get right into it. So with the goalkeepers, we've got Hugo Lloris, we've got Steve Mandanda, we got Mike Maignan. I think that's how you pronounce it, but he plays for Lille. It's a goalkeeper for Lille. With the defenders, we've got Lucas Digne, we've got Dubois, we've got Lucas Hernandez, we got Kimpembe, we got Kunada, we got Langley, Benjamin Pavard, Raphael Varane, and Kurt Zouma. What are your thoughts?
Also another very solid defense. Yeah, I think he's very spoiled for choice in this. The coach will be very spoiled for choice with regards to his team's his defense selection. So yeah, I think I'm very I'm happy. I'm actually happy. There's a lot of quality, a lot of winners in that defense. So yeah, a lot of men as well,
Hey, yeah, you need men, eh? You
Yeah, I'm
need
very happy. Yeah.
so if I have to be very honest with you, I'm very disappointed with Didier Deschamps when it comes to him, when it comes to his omission of Aymeric Laporte. I've just always felt that a centre back pairing of Laporte and Varane, when you look at that centre back pairing, I've always thought that, that would be a quality pairing. So I'm disappointed that he never called him up. He never showed any interest. So it's disappointing not to see Aymeric Laporte and him having then to, use the back route of then because he's got some
Danish
type of
citizenship.
yeah, then having him having to go that route to just play national football. I'm disappointed how that one panned out. So
True.
I would have definitely looked at him to partner Varane because I think that would be a great centre back partnership. Kimpembe, I'm not convinced, and
I think otherwise, but okay, continue.
yeah. Look, I will acknowledge that he's a very strong defender. He's coming along at PSG. It's just when it comes to my centre backs, I always prefer centre backs who are very comfortable on the ball, and centre backs also who have an inclination to making the right decisions. So I don't think that Kimpembe always makes the best decisions, and I don't think he's always comfortable. If anything, I look at him as somebody that teams would target. Not that I would have left him out of the squad. However, I just don't see him. In my opinion, I just wouldn't start him. And then when we, speaking of the fullbacks, I'm happy that Digne's got the call up. I think he's a player that has so much promise and
It's
he
very
offers a
good.
lot. And then Koundé as well. Severe man that he's got his break, and yeah, it's just yeah, I'm more or less happy with the defense. Like I said, it's just those few grievances that I have, but overall, I'm happy, and I'm also surprised to see Kurt Zouma in there.
Really?
Yeah, I am. I'm surprised because he wasn't really a regular at Chelsea, so I'm surprised. I'm surprised.
Okay, something tells me you won't be happy with my starting 11, but it's okay. We'll see when we get
We'll see when we get there. Let's go into the midfield. So in the midfield, you got N'Golo Kanté. I don't, once you have N'Golo Kanté, it's like that's all you need. And
That's all you need.
then that's it. You don't even have to call out all the other guys. But anyway, Thomas Lamar, Paul Pogba, Rabiot, Moussa Sissoko, and Tolisso. What do you make of this midfield?
It's also very, very, very solid, but I doubt the other guys will feature. I think you and I might have the same three in the middle. So I really don't see how the other guys are gonna play. But yeah, I'm very happy. I'm really happy. But I just don't see, I don't, I really don't see the other guys being given a chance, an opportunity, to be honest. What do you?
I agree with you. You know, if there is a midfield in world football that picks itself, it's this midfield,
It's the spot, you know what I mean?
undoubtedly so. You know, so moving on to the forwards, we got Benyadda, Karim Benzema, Kingsley Coman, Ousmane Dembele, Olivier Giroud, Antoine Griezmann, Kylian Mbappe, and Marcus Thuram. However, before we go into that, let's speak about Karim Benzema. What do you make of his return to the national team?
I'm so happy that him and the coach decided to put their differences aside. You could always tell that they needed that type of player going into these huge tournaments. So I'm really happy to see him back. It would be almost unfair to football to not have him play the Euros this year. So I'm very happy. Probably my favorite player or my player to watch for the competition. So yeah, I'm really happy with Benzema's selection. Very happy.
Yeah, and look, man, take nothing away from what Giroud has done for this team. However, I've always felt that you know, they go from being go-kart to F1 if you put Benzema in.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, you know, they go from go-kart to F1 if you put Benzema into that lineup, you know, especially when you look at Griezmann and you look at Mbappe. And Ousmane Dembele as well. Those are players who can link up very well with Karim Benzema. And I think it's in a sense, you know, it's yeah, man, on international stage, I think we've missed a Karim Benzema. You know, this is a player who's a really, really good football player, and in my opinion, is a tad bit underrated. I don't think people give him the respect that is due to him. You know,
True.
Karim Benzema in our generation, he's one of the best footballers, you
True.
know, and he's a.
It's very hard to stay relevant at Real Madrid for 10 years. So
Yeah.
all props to him.
You know, and giving you 20 goals season in, season out, you know, there's not many strikers who guarantee you that, you know.
True.
And I also look at his link up play. He hold up play, and you look at how he's so intelligent as well, and can score each and every single type of goal. I love, you know, I love the cheeky backheel goal. He's got that in his locker, and oh, he kills that, you know.
He's a very good boy.
And it's not just with the goal, but it's also with the assist. We've seen him with the cheeky backheel, you know, and that's just a player who oozes confidence. That's a player who's got so much intelligence. If anything, going into that dressing room, I think it uplifts the squad, because when you look at a Karim Benzema, there's a very feel-good factor about him. You know, he does look like that very suave and cool guy who's able to bring guys together. And at the end of the day, he's a serial winner. He's won all trophies on offer when it comes to club football, the experience, the types of players he's played with, you know. So I think it bodes really well for the younger attacking players, you know, and they
True,
can learn a
true.
thing or two from him. And speaking of learning a thing or two from him, I remember watching a clip from the training session, and they were doing a finishing drill, and Mbappe was just staring at him. He was just marveled, like he was in awe, like how
I
did he manage?
I really like the second finish. That was so crazy.
You know, classic Karim Benzema. So I'm very happy. I'm very happy. But anyway, overall, what do you make of the forward line? And do you think that they could lead the French national team to success?
Definitely, definitely. Probably, I think, yeah, just slightly better than Portugal's attack, but I won't even say on paper, just thinking about how good these guys are. So I think, yeah, I think the best attack going into the tournament. I'm very happy with the selection.
Yeah, I definitely like.
I might just have a problem with Turam, but yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy.
Let's speak about Thuram, because this is a player who at Mönchengladbach, he shows so much promise. He shows so much promise. However, I want to get into the qualm that you have with Thuram. Where do you find the issue with this player?
I think they were good at the beginning of the season, but I watched them against the Manchester City when they faced them in the Champions League. I'm not sure, was it quarterfinals or not quarterfinals, but I
Round of 16, if I'm not
round of
mistaken.
16. Yeah, so I've also watched them a bit, but I really don't see where he fits. Yeah, to be honest with you, I think I would have probably had another play. I can't think of anyone else at the moment, but definitely not Turam, to be honest with you.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. So let's go into your starting 11.
Okay, it's a 4-3-3 again. I'm gonna have Loris in goal, and I don't know how you're gonna feel about my centre back pairing, but gonna have Kimpembe and Zouma actually as my pairing, and I'm gonna have Pavard as my right back and Digne as my left back, and I'm gonna have N'Golo Kanté as my setter with Pogba and Rabiot as my 2-8, and my front three I'm gonna have Benzema leading the line with Mbappe on the left and Griezmann on the
Yeah, that, yeah, your defense.
No, can I tell you something? Can I tell you
Yeah.
why as to I
No,
select?
I don't mean it. I don't mean it in that sense. I don't
No,
mean
no.
that. However, I would like to hear your justification.
Okay, I'm cons okay, Kante, we know Kante is probably the best. He's definitely the best in that position, but at the back, I would really just love a so I need the dirty guys at the back to do all the hard work. I really don't want to give the opposition a chance, so that's why I went for Kimpembe and Zouma. They almost offer the similar what you call it similar qualities, considering the fact that they both are, I hate to say it, but hotheads. Like they just want to win the ball. They almost want to hurt you. So that's what I just need Pogba to be a ball player this competition. No tracking back, nothing. I don't want Pogba to even sweat while he's playing. So that's why I went for Kimpembe and Zouma at the back.
I see, I see,
And
I
to
see.
give and to allow N'Golo Kanté to go forward as well. I think we've seen him as a box-to-box kind of midfielder recently. So I think that will also remove a, yeah, it'll remove a little bit of responsibility off of his shoulders. So yeah, I think that's why I went with Kimpembe and Zouma.
Zuma, yeah. I'll give you two issues and then I'll get into my starting 11 with Zuma and Kimpembe partnership. A, they're very similar players. So then I worry about the balance of the spine, And then secondly, they're both a bit shaky on the ball. And when you look at this French national team, they're ball playing side, so you also need two center backs who can start the ball from the back. However, I do not judge another man for his decisions. That is your 11. I respect it. So, going into my 11, I've got a 4-2-3-1. Yeah.
4-2-3-1, you
Four,
say.
two, three, 4-2-3-1. Yes. So, I've got Lloris in goals. My back four, my two center backs, I've got Raphael Varane and I've got Langley. My left back, Digne, right back, Pavard. And then in the midfield, I got Kante and Pogba as the two. And then the one as my number 10 has to be Antoine Griezmann. And the reason why I want Antoine Griezmann playing as a 10 is because I just feel that he's a lot better in that position. And I feel that he's able to express himself. He scores a lot of goals, and his link-up play is you know, it's a thing of beauty, you know. And I just feel like this is a man which he needs to be unleashed, you know. Plays for Barcelona, he's a bit restricted, and you can see it with the movement. You can see it that, you know, he's not quite the Antoine Griezmann that we all came to love. However, in this role, when you play him, I feel like you offer him that freedom and gets to play off Benzema. And then my three up front, I got Benzema leading the line. Then I got Mbappe and Usman Dembele on either side. I'm going all out attack. And I just feel that, I just feel like with this French national team, you just have to attack games. And you just have to put the opponents to the... Just put them to the sword, and that's it. You know, I really like the look front three come front four with Griezmann joining in. I really like the look of that. I think there's lots of goals. There's lots of speed as well, and that front four, in my opinion, is I think going into the tournament, I think it's the best because I think it can break down any defense. It can break down a low block. And then if you want to play with the high line, Mbappe and Dembele will just kill you.
Definitely. Now anyway. I'm happy with your selection. I'm actually jealous. I'm quite jealous. But we can move on.
Yeah. The fourth and the final squad, probably the squad that caused the most controversy. For so many different reasons. However, it is the English national team. So, I will start with the goalkeepers. You got Dean Henderson, Sam Johnstone. You got Jordan Pickford. In defense, you got John Stones, Luke Shaw, Maguire, Trent Alexander-Arnold, who was called up, however, got injured, so he will miss the Euros. You got Kyle Walker, you got Tyrone Mings, you got Reece James, you got Connor Cody, Ben Chilwell, and Kieran Trippier. The first question, which everybody asks when it comes to this defense, is why four right backs? Initially, it was four right backs until Trent got injured, but why four right backs? Why would you pick four right backs?
I really don't have an answer for that. I'm still trying to... I really don't understand why you'd go into a competition with four right backs. I mean, rather four strikers, not four right backs. So I really don't know what to tell you. But yeah, I'm really shocked at that decision. What do you think? Maybe you have an answer for me.
So, okay, on the balance of things, you know, when you look at the four players, right, and this is not justification for them. So I will argue for, and then I will argue against. And arguing against, that's how I feel. That's my own opinion. So when you argue for, you know, when you look at it, you got four quality players. Firstly, right, and you got four players who are very versatile. Let's take Trent Alexander-Arnold. With Trent, with Trent, you can play him as the right-sided fullback, or you can play him as wingback, right? What he also offers is the set piece danger, you know? And a lot of people have spoken about him venturing into midfield. However, I don't think you would play Alexander Arnold in midfield for the first time at the Euros. I think that's just I think it's something you would have tried out before. However, from that perspective, he does offer quite a bit. And then moving on to Kieran Trippier, I think that's a player who has had a really great season for Atletico Madrid, and
very underrated.
And when you look at the balance of things, I think he edges the right backs. You know, he's not my favorite from these four. However, if I have to be objective
True, true.
Statistically speaking as well, he edged them with regards to the numbers, with regards to the balance as well. Because, you know, he's not just offensive or defensive, but he offers both. He offers both very well, and he's very experienced as well, you know. And he's also a dead ball specialist. And when we move on to Reece James, one thing about Reece James is that he's very versatile. And I say this because he can play as the right-sided centre-back in a three at the back. So if England were ever to play three at the back, you could play Reece James as the right-sided centre-back, or you can play him as a right-back in the four. You know, or the right wing back in the three, in the 3-5-2. You know, so he's very, very versatile. And what I like about him is that he's very solid defensively. Very solid defensively. He's got, what I like about his delivery is that very pinpoint, you know, very pinpoint. And what I also like about it is that he's not a player who's going to flash in a lot of balls. So he doesn't give you quantity. You know, he's not going to smash in 5 to 6 crosses per game, but he gives you quality. Gives you 2 or 3 crosses, it's quality. You know that about him. Defensively, he's very strong. So I think he's a very safe pick. And I think somebody who, within the next 5 years, will, between him and Trent, you know, they'll be competing to make that position their own. And then when you move on to Kyle Walker, he's also very similar in the sense that he could play as the right-sided centre-back in the three. You know? However, this is when I start to argue against it. I think you only need three and not four. I say three because Kyle Walker, you know, in my opinion, going forward, is not the very best. And there's this notion that he's so strong defensively. However, I just feel that as much as people may feel like he's strong defensively, but there's an error there with Kyle Walker. And we've seen him throw away so many penalties. We've seen him make so many bad defensive and tactical decisions where he's caught on the wrong side of the ball. And then he also doesn't offer much offensively. So, you know, when I look at a Kyle Walker, that is the one right back I would have left out, if I have to be honest with you.
I'm definitely with you on that one.
Yeah, so I would have gone with Trent, James, Trippier for the experience, and then James and Arnold, the youthful exuberance that they offer, and knowing that going forward, they are the two right backs who will be contesting for that position. So those are the three right backs I would have gone with. But with Trent's injury, now we've got James, Trippier, and Kyle Walker. But anyway, the question then becomes, what do you make of the defense overall going into the Euro 2020 tournament?
It's also very solid. I'm happy with the coach's selection. Yeah, it's just the whole matter with regards to the right backs, just two, they're all similar players, almost of the same qualities, you know. So with my unpopular take, I think I would have maybe had Wan-Bissaka there. So I don't know how you'd feel about that, you know. Maybe you could have went with four, but just it's someone different. So I think I would have went with Wan-Bissaka instead of Kyle Walker. I'm really happy with the selection. It's quite solid.
You know, I like the fact that you mentioned Wan-Bissaka because he is, you know, with Wan-Bissaka, I'll say this, and this is going to be a very bizarre statement, you know. However, those who understand me understand me. Wan-Bissaka is the perfect player when you get to the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. And I say that because in the latter stages of a tournament, that's when you come up against your Portugal. That's when you come up against your France. That's when you come up against your Belgium. That's when you're coming up against the very best wingers in the business. And that's where Wan-Bissaka fits in, because Wan-Bissaka can do a job on a Dembele. He can do a job on Kylian Mbappe. He can do a job on a João Felix. he can do a job on an Eden Hazard. You know, one Bissaka can do a job on almost any winger. You know, any winger, you know. If you know, you find yourself in a situation where one has to pick their best winger, and like then I must then pick the guy who's gonna play against that winger. I would always pick one Bissaka.
One Bissaka, like, too.
He's my fighter for 1v1 situations, you know, like he's that player, you know.
The best.
But what I do understand is that a player has to offer a well-balanced dynamic, you know. So offensively, he's not the best on the ball. He's not the most comfortable, you know. So I think if Wan-Bissaka can work on those aspects of his game, I think he can be a very, very, very good, very, can very I, good player.
Sorry, can I tell you something interesting, actually? He has more assists than Reece James in the Premier League, and more crosses. So I think the problem with Wan-Bissaka is that he doesn't, how can I put it? He's not easy on the eye, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the problem.
And also contextually, so if you go look at those assists, you know, a person then sees that this is a man who's just, he's just with his crosses, and this is what I dislike about Wan-Bissaka offensively with regards to his crosses. He just hits areas and he's just smashing the balls.
True.
You know? I remember there's this goal that Martial scored. I forgot who they were playing against, but it was a header. And Wan-Bissaka just, he crossed it and it looked like a very good ball. But when you look at the replay, it's Wan-Bissaka getting to the bar line, you know, and his head is down and he just smashes it into the 6-yard box. The problem then was the defender. The defender didn't anticipate the ball well. You know, he went to the front post as opposed to keeping his position and actually blocking the ball. And then Martial got the header on. So he's got those type of assists in his locker, which I think, was it the ball or was it bad defending? You know, and when you start to question that, was it a good assist or was it bad defending, becomes a problem. However, when you look at Reece James, Alexander Arnold, and Trippier, whenever they deliver a ball, it's quality. You know, like, there's no doubt about it.
It looks very intentional, you know.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. And with Wan-Bissaka, it's a bit bizarre because this is a man who played as a winger. So for him to be not so comfortable in offensive positions is a bit weird. Like, you're a winger, but you're so good at the defensive side. Yeah, but, you know, we could go on a tangent when it comes to these right backs. You know, we really could. So let's move on to the midfielders, which also caused quite a lot of talking points because of how thin a lot of people feel they are. B, also having included an injured Jordan Henderson, who is joined by Mason Mount, Declan Rice, Jude Bellingham, and Calvin Phillips. What do you make of this midfield?
I'm really happy with the midfield, and I see people actually, you might actually be one of the people being against the Henderson's selection, but I'm actually happy to see him there. So yeah, but we'll get into it. Yeah, I'm very happy. It could go toe to toe with any midfield.
Yeah, so my issue is, let's go to the Henderson, you know, because I should skip. My issue with Henderson is that this is a man who we don't really know, you know. There's no timeline with regards to, well, they say there is, but it's as if we don't really know when he will be fit. So it's us clutching on straws as opposed to a Kevin De Bruyne, who you know that he will miss the first game, but he will start at least two of the games in the group stages. With Jordan Henderson, you know, there's no assurance, there's no report coming out, you know. And my issue then becomes that he's taking up a player spot, right? This is a player who's injured, A player B, who didn't have a great season, who's taking up a player spot. And then you've got guys like James Ward-Prowse, guys like Jesse Lingard, who are on form and who offer a different dynamic when it comes to the midfield perspective. Are they starting players? No, they're not starting players. We know that. However, you'd rather have a player who's fit in a player spot, right? Yeah. What I want to acknowledge concerning Jordan Henderson is his leadership skills. I really acknowledge that. However, have him there, but don't have him in a player spot. Except, I just feel like that we should just get to a point of acceptance where, you know, if within the next week there is no report that comes out, a detailed report with regards to his injury, I think they have to just make a decision and say, you know what? He will be a part of the team at large, you know, but not as a player. Because I do understand that leadership is very vital. Very However, important. Forcing the agenda with a player who's A, who's not fully fit, B, is also not on form. And when you've got players on form, I just think that's clutching on straws. And when you look at the Dutch national team, they have not included a Van Dijk.
Van Dijk
is there. You know, he's part of the players. He, because of the experience, the knowledge that he has and what he brings to the dressing room, you know, which is very important, you know. However, you don't have Netherlands now listing Van Dijk as a player over another player who's been fully fit throughout the season, who's probably had a good season. So that's where my issue is with Jordan Henderson. And with Gareth Southgate, mainly Gareth Southgate, because he's the coach.
You know,
he's the one who has the onus and the decision, you know. But I will give you a chance to either argue for or against my notion.
Okay, I'm really against what you just said. With Henderson, I'm also considering what he does on the pitch. How can I put it? He's a very simple footballer. He gets the ball, he looks up, he passes, he can hit a diagonal pass, but more than anything, he's a player coach almost, you know. So I'm considering the amount of young players they also have. They're definitely going to need someone to lead them, you know. So yeah. I think that's why Henderson would be very important. I understand that he's off form or hasn't proven enough to proven himself enough to be selected, but I'm just thinking about what he does on the pitch more than anything. And he's a simple player, you know, so I don't think it will affect them that much. I don't think he'll have to ease into things. So I'm happy with him being there. I just think he'll be very important for the young guys.
And speaking of young guys, Jude Bellingham is I'm so excited that he's in the squad. I'm over the moon. I'm so happy that he's in the squad. This guy is just phenomenal, man. He's actually one of my favorite players, you know. And he's a player that I actually followed when he was actually playing championship football for Birmingham, wearing the jersey number 22, which was retired by Birmingham. And a lot of people were like, what? Retiring a jersey for a 16-year-old?
Imagine.
You know? And when he was still on 145 pounds a week. So this is a player I followed for a very long time who I thought at United we would get. But when we didn't get him, I was sort of happy we didn't get him because I just didn't feel that he was going to grow in that space.
True.
As opposed to where he is now, which is Borussia Dortmund. I just felt that there he was a lot better suited for the environment at Borussia Dortmund. And also the coaching at Borussia Dortmund, the regular Champions League football and everything surrounding Borussia Dortmund and the feel-good factor of the young squad that they have.
True.
I'm really excited that he's been included. Calvin Phillips as well from Leeds. You know, this is really good, you know. And when you speak about Leeds from a cultural and historical perspective, you know, this is big for them because when last did Leeds United have a player within their ranks called up to the national team. It's
true,
been a
true.
For a major tournament.
It's
so I'm
very
really excited, you know. And of course, Mason Mount has had a wonderful season. Declan Rice. So, you know, there's very good players in that midfield. You know, I am happy concerning that midfield. However, like I'd echoed earlier on, you know, you leave, you know, in my opinion, one right back or two right backs. You include James Ward-Prowse. You include Lingard as well, which offers you a different perspective, because a lot of those defenders aren't going to play. Because we all know that with defense, it's more or less similar throughout the tournament. You know, and you've got one backup guys. You know, however, you know, I'm more or less satisfied that some of my favorite players have been included into that midfield. And going forward, and speaking of the forwards, we've got Harry Kane, Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Phil Foden, Jack Grealish, Jadon Sancho, and Saka, God's child. So that is the forward line which will be leading England this Euro 2020. What do you make of that forward line?
Okay, also very, very strong. Yeah, I'm happy with the selection. I think there's a lot of versatility. So I think different players can offer you different qualities. So yeah, it's very exciting, you know. But I think, yeah, I think there's one player I could have... Okay, yeah, there's one player that I think deserves to be in the selection, which is Patrick Bamford. And I think I would have had him over DLC, to be honest with you. But I'm happy with the selection, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that, strongly so, that Patrick Bamford definitely deserved a call-up because, you know, if... Look, let's put emotions aside. Let's put everything which is not factual, which is not statistical aside, and let's just look at the numbers, right? Bar Harry Kane, he's got the best numbers. The best numbers, right? Out of all the players that you could have possibly picked for the English national team, except for bar Harry Kane. So it just didn't make sense to me. And also considering the fact that the type of football that Leeds play, Leeds are a very dynamic football team, and the team that they're a team, because they're so dynamic, they're a team that are able to change the system up, you know, within a couple of minutes, if it's not working. And the types of players he plays with at Leeds, you know, he plays with very intelligent ball players. So I would have thought he would fit perfectly into that squad. You know, yes, he's not a starting player because there's Harry Kane, but coming off the bench, he gives you something very different. And definitely, what I like about him that a lot of strikers don't have is that he's also got assist threat, you know.
He's actually so good on the ball. I don't think people see that part of his game, but he's very good on the ball.
Very good, you know, for a player to rack up 7 assists. You know, playing as a striker, you know, it shows you that that is more or less a very complete striker, you know. And I think when you then look at the likes of Grealish, Phil Foden, Saka, you know, Sterling, players who could play, because you need players, you need a striker that players can play off and also a striker who can link well with these players. And I think Patrick Bamford is that. Not that he could be starting, but he definitely does give you he gives you versatility, you know, and he gives you a different dimension. So I think he had to be in the squad. You know, I think it's injustice that he's not in the squad.
True. No, definitely.
But anyway, let's move on to our starting 11s. So, which formation would you play and who makes your starting 11?
Again, I'm going in with a 4-3-3. So I'm going to have Dean Henderson in the goals. And I'm going to have a centre-back pairing of John Stones and Maguire. I'm going to have Reece James as my right-back, Luke Shaw as my left-back. have Henderson as my sitter, with Mount and Bellingham as my 2-8, and a front three of Harry Kane leading the line, alongside Foden on his left and Grealish on the right. So I don't know how you think about that.
Yeah, that is a very interesting lineup, you know. And when it comes to this English national team, it's you know, there's so many things that could be said. You know, there's so many different options that you could go for. And if I have to be honest with you, some of the guys I would have had in my preferred 11 are not even in the squad, which is, I know, really? Somebody then it raises an eyebrow and it's like, well, what are you talking about? You know, a player like a player like Fikayo Tomori, I just don't understand how. That's also another omission, you know, that I mentioned when we were speaking of the defenders. But in my opinion, if Gomez is not fit, you know, alongside Stone, then it's Tomori. But then I know people would kill me and say, "What? You'd leave out Maguire?" You know, there's a lot of talking points when it comes to the English national team.
True.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. However, I would, it's very interesting. I would go with, I would go with the 4-3-3. I'd go with the 4-3-3. So I got Dean Henderson in goals. I've got John Stones, and I'm not the biggest fan of Maguire, but I've got him alongside.
I could really tell.
Yeah, so I'm not the biggest fan, but I've got him alongside John Stones because at the end of the day, he is the captain of Manchester United. He did have a very good season, you know,
true.
And very, very solid as well. And he's got the experience now. So I would go with the pair of them. And then at right back, you know, my fullbacks, I have to go with the Chelsea pair, I think. You know, Reece James and Chilwell on the other side. I think for Chelsea, they were really, really phenomenal.
True.
Yeah, those are the two players that I would definitely go for. And then in midfield, this is where it was very tricky for me. But my midfield would be Declan Rice, Mason Mount. And I got Bellingham. And then my front three, Phil Foden, Sancho, and Harry Kane.
Okay.
So okay. I really love the look of Grealish. And a lot of Disky Talk with Leolo listeners know how much I love Jack Grealish. Yeah. However, I think for balance within the squad and having a dynamic midfield three, you know, I think, and also considering the aspect that he's a great impact player, you know, he comes off the bench, he changes things, you know, I think that is something that is to be considered. And as the tournament goes on, you know, he could also be a starting player. I think he deserves to be a starting player. You know, just right now, when I look at the balance of the midfield, you know, you need a defensive midfielder, which is Declan Rice. You know, and then you just can't leave out Mount.
You really can't
leave out Mount. And what Bellingham offers is second to none. You know, there is no midfield player like Bellingham in England.
True.
And I say that with the greatest respect, because the reason why he wears that number 22 is because he's not a 10. He's not an 8. He's not a 4. But he's all of those things in one. And that's why he wears 2, because he's a 4, he's a 10, and he's an 8 as well.
Wow. Did you come up with that, or is that like what he said?
It's the development coaches at Birmingham, when picking a position for him, that's what they told him, that, you know what, you're a very good player, but if we played you just as a 10, we'd be doing you injustice. If we played you as a 4, we'd be doing you an injustice. If we played you as an 8, we'd be doing your talent an injustice. So we see you as a 22. You're all of those things
in one. Okay.
And that's how he got the jersey number 22. And that's why he wears the jersey number 22. And before I actually knew of that, because I've followed Jude Bellingham for the past 2 years, before I actually knew of that, when I was watching him, I felt like that. Man, he gives me a very good feel. He's he can do a bit of everything. And I love players like that, you know. So I feel like you need him in that midfield. You need him in that midfield. And
definitely.
Yeah, the front three being Sancho, Foden and Kane. I think in a sense, it also picks itself, because if we have to be honest, Sterling and Rashford haven't been consistent towards the end of the season, you know. And one, as an unpopular opinion, one can even say that Saka may just edge them. Saka may just edge them, you know. And when I look at Rashford and I look at Sterling, I don't know, man. You know, they look a shadow of their former selves, and I don't know. They're just not the confident, usual Sterling and Marcus Rashford, in my opinion, that a lot of people are used to. They're not as consistent as they can be, you know. True. They've put up the numbers, but there's also something about the actual performance itself and, how they lack that that direct play that they've always had of being able to beat players. And, you know, something just doesn't look right with the pair of them. And, yeah, I wouldn't start either one of them, you know. I would rather go with a Phil Foden and a Jadon Sancho alongside a Harry Kane, which I think is very dynamic, added with a Grealish and even a Saka as well. You know, those players, I think, you know, are they offer quite a lot. And then having Chilwell and Reece James going on attack to whip those balls in. I think it's more or less a very balanced squad. And that's one thing I always try to find whenever I pick a starting 11 or a squad. As much as I'm a very offensive-minded individual who believes in having a well-structured and a beautiful style of play, however, balance is the most important thing.
It's very important. True. Can I ask you something before we move along? Who do you now call up considering Trent's injury?
You know, this is where you right your wrong as Southgate.
True.
You know?
True.
This is where you right your wrong. And it's a tough one, because I'm looking at three guys. I'm looking at Bamford. I'm looking at Lingard, and I'm looking at James Ward-Prowse.
Okay.
Right. However, when I look at the forward line, I'd go with Bamford, and the reason why I'd go with Bamford is because of form. When you look at that forward line, it's only, you know, Harry Kane as the top striker who really inspired confidence, who's had a great season, who's been consistent throughout. But I mean, when you look at Dominic Calvert-Lewin, so in the number nine role, I think they're thin, because you take out Kane and then there's Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And I don't know. I would right my wrong and call up Bamford.
True. I'm definitely with you on that one. DCL is a good player, but I don't think he could take you the whole way. And I think I'll go with Bamford as well.
Yeah. Definitely. So moving on, let's go to the extra time segment. So I want to ask you, right? We're gonna rank the squads now, right? And we're gonna rank them out of 10. So we'll start with Portugal.
Portugal.
How much would you rank them out of 10?
Whoa. I think I'll give them a solid 7. A solid 7. No, actually an 8. An 8. I'm looking at my papers right now. I think an 8. They really look good on paper. So I think an 8, yeah. An 8 out of 10.
Interesting. So I would give them a 7, a solid 7. You know, and yeah, I think I think, a 7 in comparison to the other squads.
Yeah.
But obviously, when you look at that squad alone, it's a very strong squad.
Yeah, however, they look very good on paper.
Yeah. So I would give them a 7. And moving on to Belgium, I would personally rank Belgium. I'd give them an 8.5.
Really?
Yeah, I would. I really would. I like the balance, the balance of the team. You know, throughout each position, I think they are very balanced. They've got cover in each position, and I think this team will really compete. You know, and I think, you know, this could be their chance for, you know, they've been dubbed as Belgium's golden generation to finally win something. I think this could be their chance. So I'd give them an 8.5. Yeah.
Oh, I think I'll give them a 7.5, considering the center back pairing. I think that's, yeah, there's a slight weakness there. So I think a 7.5, and yeah, a lot. I think the five out of the 7.5 probably comes from it, but yeah, I'm just not sure with the center back pairing.
Yeah, so
7.5. Yeah, but going forward, they look very, very terrifying.
Yeah, and moving on to the French national team, how much would you rank them out of 10?
A solid 9. Definitely a solid 9. Probably the best team on paper. And yeah, I know what a lot of these guys can offer. They've really proven themselves. So a solid 9. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you on the fact that they've got the best team. I think it's the strongest squad. And I think it's one of the best footballing teams we've seen in a while, you know. They've just I think they're, in my opinion, they are the perfect team. So balanced, well organized, you know. And I would give them a 9.5, actually. You know?
9.5.
I think they're the closest thing to a perfect team.
You know, it reminds me of the old Spanish side, you know, where you can't really find a weakness in the team. So
considering that you could actually have two different starting 11s.
True.
Where okay, we do know that you will include your Kante. You know, you will include your Pogba and maybe your Benzema. But in a sense, a person could even leave out a Benzema and
Benzema, go with Giroud. Giroud, yeah. True.
And
true.
You know, and so there's just so many options when you look at that team. And for me, I always say that the best squads are the ones that give you the toughest 11 versus 11 training session. And that's that French national team, that it's so competitive in the national team. And although, if I must be very honest with you, I am very disappointed. I actually didn't mention this earlier on, that they didn't call Ndombele.
Oh, Ndombele. Shoo.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, definitely. I forgot about that one. Yeah, he could have definitely. I don't think they have a midfield that's pressure resistant as Ndombele.
Yeah.
Pogba's good, but I don't think he can, you know, players just take the ball and make a plan. Yeah. Okay, Ndombele, actually. I think, yeah, going back to the whole Turam situation, I think I would leave to on Ndombele.
Ndombele, yeah. And the funny thing is, bro, if Ndombele was in that squad, he would have been a part of my starting 11. I rate him highly, like so highly.
Definitely.
And it would have raised eyebrows, you know, as to who I would have left out. However, that's an episode for another day.
Another day, yeah.
And the last squad, England. A lot has been said about this English national team. What would you rate them out of 10?
I'm going to give them a 8.5. An 8.5. I mean, it's also a new generation, you know. Look very exciting. A lot of guys have proven themselves. So I think an 8.5 for the English side. What do you think?
You know, there's just with England, I would give them a 7.5. A 7.5 because beyond the starting 11, there's not a lot, you know. And like I'd mentioned that when some of your best players aren't on form and they're struggling and a lot of their performances in the past couple of weeks and past months have been uncharacteristic, then it becomes a problem. And also considering that Raheem Sterling, this is actually a crazy stat, that Raheem Sterling has never scored a goal at a major tournament for England.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I swear to you.
That is so bad.
You know, and with that stat and with his form and coming into the Euros, then you think to yourself,
it doesn't make things any easier for them.
Yes. So that's at a senior level. He's never scored a goal, you know. So I look at that and then I think, if you're Jadon Sancho and you're Foden and you're Grealish, who possibly could be in the starting 11, don't deliver. What do you have on the bench? And you look at it and you think to yourself, you know, there's not much to work with. And that's why I'd give them a 7.5.
True. But also on the other hand, England they've got a history of just not... I mean, in every international competition, you'd give them the upper hand considering the amount of quality they have in their team, but they just never seem to get it right. Like, they just never seem to get it right. Whether it's this, I'm hoping that this generation will be different, but yeah, on international stages, never seem to get it right. But I hope the young boys can break that curse.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I gave them a 7.5. I think English national team has always been overrated. Yeah, they've just... And the thing is, you know, I've seen a better England squad than this. You know, everybody's raving about this England squad, but I've seen a better England squad that didn't deliver. You know, I'm not as optimistic. I'm more on the fence. And the big thing concerning this English squad, for me, is Gareth Southgate.
Really?
Yes. I feel like Gareth Southgate he's a good manager. I just don't think he's the best suited coach for this crop of players. There's another coach out there who can get a lot more out of these players. And with how Gareth Southgate has gone about things in the past and with him lacking backbone when it comes to certain decisions, tactical decisions. There's a lot of question marks when it comes to Gareth Southgate, in my opinion. And so I think that's also another big factor concerning England. However, we've come to the very end of this episode, which was a special feature episode, which I'm very excited because, you know, the Euros, you know, off season, that's what's going to keep us glued to our screens. You know, the league is over. And now we're heading into international competition. So I'm very excited about this one.
Finally, some football. Actually, I was actually checking yesterday. There's literally 76 days till we get any Premier League action. Can you believe that? So I'm really happy to have some football.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So thank you very much, Leba, for coming through and blessing me with your knowledge and your insight. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. This was another episode of Disky Talk with Luyolo. Signing out.